All right, welcome to the first of its kind, world-changing manufacturers network. Lisa Ryan has her ears to the ground and her heart in the game. Get ongoing education and new connections right here with Lisa and the manufacturers network. Buckle your seat, listen, and spread the word. Here's Lisa.
Hey, it's Lisa Ryan. Welcome to the Manufacturers Network podcast. Excited to introduce our guest today, Tom Garrity. Tom is founder of Psychological Safety, and he brings a unique perspective on fostering safe and innovative work environments. With a background spanning technology, healthcare, aviation, and government, Tom offers insights into transforming dysfunctional teams into high-performing units and nurturing trust and collaboration. So, Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Lisa. It's great to be here.
So share with us a little bit about your background and what led you to doing what you do.
Yeah, thanks. So I've got quite a varied background, quite a diverse background, I think. So my background originally after university was as an ecologist in ecological research. And then through a roundabout sort of way, moved into technology, and through a career in technology, ended up managing teams, managing bigger teams, engineering teams, software engineering teams, and ended up as CIO and CTO of various firms. And through that journey, I became even more passionate about creating the conditions in which people and teams can thrive. And so I was really passionate about doing it. I just didn't really have the language. So I had to learn the tools to do it, but I didn't really have much of the language to do it. And then a few years ago, around 2015 or so, I came across the term psychological safety through a TED talk by Amy Edmondson. And that was my light bulb moment, when there was pretty much an actual light bulb going on. This is what I've been trying to do. This is the stuff that I've been trying to do for all along. But I just didn't have a term for it. I just didn't have the language for it. And then when I had the language for it, then I was able to start doing more stuff.
Okay. And you have a really diverse background in all of these. So how has this shaped your understanding of psychological safety within teams?
So my background in technology caused me so that was when I really wanted to create and help others create high performing teams, and recognize that you can't just tell a team to be high performing. You can't just give them the tools and say, be great. You have to create conditions that allow them to be great. And a few years ago, we spun up on our own and we created psychsafety.co.uk as a website and started doing this. I'm now a professional psychological safety geek, and I absolutely love it for a living. And through our work, we work with aviation teams, healthcare teams, tech teams, manufacturing teams, and all sorts of other types of team in between. And I think what's really interesting is that how it works in practice and the things that people do in practice are really different. Fairly obviously in different domains. Pilots are flying planes, nurses are caring for patients, and people in manufacturing are operating machinery or doing something like that. But at a fundamental level, these dynamics of psychological safety, the ability to speak up to others in your group or around you with questions, concerns, and mistakes, it's the same. It's the same stuff. It's the same human stuff underlying it all, whatever domain or context we're in, whatever industry we're in.
Interesting. Yeah, I think of psychological safety, and of course it brings me back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, because that really is the basic foundation of everything else that we do in the workplace. And yet it seems to be often overlooked, like it sounds like what you're finding. So how are you, what's the right question? How are you getting your clients to understand that at the foundation of all of their employee retention and all of their employee engagement programs and all of their team building lies the very foundation of psychological safety? How do you get them to see that?
So that's a good question. And it's easier said than done, sure, certainly. It's one One of the really powerful ways we do that is through stories. And stories are really powerful because they help people take themselves out of their current context, where there might be associations and stigma and other things going on, and think about different contexts. So we might talk about disasters. We might talk about plane crashes or Chernobyl or the Challenger disaster. But we also talk about successes, great, fantastic successes of, say, Paul O'Neill at Alcoa and other great business and other types of success. And we then work through those stories, we work through the dynamics that have led to those things, whether it's a disaster or whether it's a really great outcome. And underlying it all, you can see evidently underlying all of this is that foundation, just in a hierarchy, at the bottom of it all, there is a foundation of psychological safety. None of this works without psychological safety. And you can see a lot of these disasters and things happen in at least in part, or could have been prevented had there been a greater psychological safety at some point in that process. So that's, people can really get to grips with stories and people can really engage with them. And so we use stories a lot in our work. Yeah.
So can you give us an example of a story that you used with a client that helped them to maybe take a dysfunctional team and turn them around into a high-performing unit using the stories and that foundation of psychological safety?
Yeah, so, and there are so many to choose from. And sometimes we, so in some organizations, we might be working with folks who just really want to avoid things going wrong. They're really focused on, really want to avoid bad things happening. We want to keep things just going nicely, chugging along. Other organizations, like little tech startups, are more interested in innovating quickly and trying out new things and failing fast, in lots of intelligent failures. So one thing we need to do is work out who we're talking to and what's going to resonate most. But one story that sort of resonates with everyone is the Tenerife air disaster of 1977. And there's a lot to this, but I'll keep it quite simple. But essentially, so this is the deadliest aviation disaster in history. And it happened on the ground. And two 747s crashed into each other. And there were lots of contributing factors that went into this, including some radio issues, fog. There was a bomb scare at a nearby airport that sent a load of planes to be diverted to Tenerife. But what actually happened was that a pilot of one plane decided to take off without air traffic control clearance in the fog on a runway where there was another plane taxiing towards them on the same runway. And the flight engineer in the cockpit and the first officer both didn't speak up with enough candor or boldness to challenge what the captain of this plane was doing. And that was in part due to many power dynamics and some other things that are going on in the cockpit. But the environment in that cockpit was not a psychologically safe environment. And so they didn't speak up. And they didn't speak up even though they had concerns that their own lives and the lives of other people were at risk. And that's how strong a lack of psychological safety can be. When we feel psychologically unsafe, we may not even speak up if we feel lives are at risk, even though we absolutely should, but it's such a strong force. And so making that point, when people don't speak up in that context, it's hardly surprising that in, say, a marketing meeting, someone doesn't speak up with a new idea for another campaign, or if they're in a manufacturing context, they don't speak up to point out, should that machine be configured like that? Is that light supposed to be on? It's no wonder that people don't speak up with the small things if people don't even speak up with the really big things sometimes.
And I think we've heard that story too. You had mentioned the Challenger. That was a big thing as well. If people aren't familiar with the Challenger story, how did psychological safety play into that?
Yeah, so this is another interesting one, excuse me, because in this case, people did speak up. People did speak up at a ground level, at the sharp end of work, if you like. So people did speak up, but their voices weren't heard adequately. And what also happened with that is in NASA at the time, there was a great deal of hierarchy, lots of managers, and lots of pressure to make the launch date. And the decision to cancel or postpone the launch was at a very high level in the organization. So this concern, there was a concern about the O-rings and solid rocket boosters that got brittle at low temperatures. And this concern, this had happened before, and so there was a this concept of normalization of deviance where people were thinking it's been like that before. It was never blown up before, so it should be okay next time. But because this time it was expected to be much colder, people were raising concerns. But that concern got diluted as it went through the management layers, if you like. So every time it went through and someone had to give their boss bad news, no one wants, we don't want to give our boss bad news. That's not a nice feeling, and we're worried that we'll get in trouble for doing so, or to get an eye roll, or they won't like us if we do that. So every time it got communicated up, it got diluted, a little bit filtered down. And so by the time it got to the top, it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a big problem at all. It happened before. It'll be fine next time. It'll be fine this time. And of course it wasn't. And we see this in organizations all the time. We see this with RAG status reports, where the status of things get tweaked by managers. If something's a red status or an amber status, it will get turned into an amber or a green. And so status reports will get greenwashed as they go up towards the CEO. So CEOs are often like, everyone's telling me everything is fine, and yet everything is clearly not fine. So why aren't I hearing the bad news? And often the answer is a lack of psychological safety.
And so how do you bridge that gap between the people at the top and the people at the bottom to create that safety so that people can share what's really going on? And so management knows it seems like a really good idea, but yet these cases happen all the time that we're dealing with that. So what have you found that helps to bridge that gap?
So there's a few things here. One is that we need mechanisms to do that. It's not simple enough to just wait for someone to tell you the thing they want to tell you. There needs to be some sort of mechanism or process or platform or something. So we often use the analogy of the Andon cord in the Toyota production system. The ability to pull the cord, stop that part of the line, ask for help, point out something is wrong. And people get praised for doing so. That's a good thing. It's a good thing because we get an opportunity to improve something, to fix something, to make something better. And so in many organizations I work with, they might not be a manufacturing organization, so they don't have a physical cord to pull or a button to push, but they adopt the language. You can adopt the language of, I need to pull the cord, or you can walk into your boss's office and say, I need to pull the Andon cord about this thing. And that just having the language to do that makes that a little bit easier. But there's also, just as I said, in Toyota, people get praised for pulling the cord. It's seen as a good thing to do. We managers, leaders, peers, colleagues need to get a little bit better at praising people, thanking people when they bring us bad news. Because the bad news already exists. It's there, whether we like it or not. The defects are there, whether we like them or not. We want to hear about them. It's only when we hear about them that we can fix them, right? So we need to. One of the ways we like to conceptualize psychological safety is through a cost-benefit analysis. When we say something, when any of us say something, we think about whether we should say it or not, and we think about the cost of speaking up, the cost of th saying the thing, against the benefit of saying the thing. And so as peers and managers, particularly managers and leaders, we need to think about ways that we can reduce the cost of speaking up with a concern or a mistake and increase the benefit. And that means actually doing something as a result of someone speaking up and thanking people for speaking up with the idea or the question or the concern or the mistake, and sort of increasing the interpersonal benefit. And in some cases, you might increase benefits in other ways. There's a great example of Mullally at Ford, who promoted the guy in the meeting room for telling him candidly that stuff was going wrong in the organization, because he knew stuff was going wrong, but no one was telling him what was going on. And so the first time someone told him, okay, this is what's going wrong, brilliant, you get a promotion. That's how we want to, that's how we encourage people to speak up in our organizations. There are so many pressures to not speak up. We need to try and get rid of, to tease out those pressures, get rid of those pressures, and increase the good things that happen as a result of speaking up.
Yeah, and it seems that trust and collaboration are big parts of that. And if the psychological safety is not there, a lot of times it's because the employees don't trust leadership enough to have their backs to take care of them when they are doing it. So what have you found are some of the key steps that leaders can take to build and to maintain trust with their teams and create that psychological safety in the process?
Yes, this is a tricky one, isn't it? Because it's like that old saying about trust. It's hard to build trust. It takes time to build trust, but it's very easily destroyed. It's very quickly destroyed. And particularly, so psychological safety isn't about job security or anything like that. However, it is if there are, for example, if there have been recently or there may be in the future rounds of redundancies and things like that. People aren't necessarily going to be a little bit more wary about speaking up with a mistake, let's say, because they're worried about putting their head above the parapet. So we need to be really candid with people that speaking up about mistakes or problems or concerns won't result in bad things happening, like you losing your job or losing out on future opportunities or losing out on promotions. And in fact, good things might happen as a result. And we have to live that. We have to act it out. We have to walk the talk as well as talk it. And so we have to make it real. We also have to model this behavior. You know, we can't expect people to speak up with ideas and mistakes in particular if we don't admit them ourselves. If as a leader, we're not comfortable admitting our mistakes, how can we expect people to who report to us, who are junior to us, who have less status or privilege and more to lose, and they're more at risk than us, how can we expect them to speak up with their mistakes? So we have to model this behavior, make it clear that it's safe to do. Talk about the big mistakes you've made, and in fact, talk about the little mistakes you've made as well. So modeling this psychological safety behavior is really powerful.
Yeah, I remember it was years ago. I was speaking at an event, and one of the people shared with me, a manager, that she did something, and it was a mistake that she made that almost cost the company their largest client. And of course, she went through and she jumped through all kinds of hoops and stuff and ended up saving the client. But now she actually starts up her meetings with who screwed up worse than I did this week, and what did you learn from it? When that level of vulnerability is there that managers will admit to how they messed up, then it's much more likely that the employees are going to feel that they can share that too. And again, turn it into a learning opportunity so that they can do that.
Yeah, it's so powerful, and it's why. So there's lots of organizations I work with who have they have things like failure walls where people write down the failures that they've made and the mistakes they've made. They stick them up on the wall for everyone to see. They have used the word, but F up Fridays or F up nights where everyone comes together and has a bit of a celebration, a bit of a party. People get up on stage and talk about F up that they've made. And how and yeah, what they learned from it in the past, and what's changed as a result, and it normalizes failure because we are humans and we're going to make mistakes. Human error is going to be a thing as long as there are humans, and we can put in things to prevent them happening, but we can only do that through talking about them.
Yeah, I think about what you said earlier about in some segments, like in tech, they want to fail as quickly as possible as far as to be able to innovate quickly. So, what about psychological safety and its ability to basically support teams, but in sectors where the cost of failure can be high?
So this is really interesting because this is really where psychological safety, the concept really first got embedded. You know, if you look at let's back to the example of Tenerife and aviation, the Tenerife disaster led directly to the implementation with the creation and implementation of a safety program called CRM, Cockpit Resource Management, that later expanded into Crew Resource Management. And that program includes lots of things around human factors and other things, but it's at its core, it's about creating an environment where people can speak up, speak truth, and speak up, speak their concerns to, especially to people in power. And I think the reason it emerged first in those industries where the risk of failure, where the consequences of failure are so high, is because it had to. It was
Right.
getting too much to just keep on going the same old. And if you look at other domains where the cost of failure is less high consequence, less severe, there's not as much talk about psychological safety. It's not as well implemented. It's quite a new idea. It's quite a new concept because they haven't been forced to address it yet. Whereas in those domains, in safety critical domains, they absolutely had to.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So when you have, when you're working with executives, and again, the audience here is primarily manufacturing, where there can be a big risk as far as from a quality standpoint or people getting hurt on the job standpoint, what actionable advice would you give to people in these industries to start implementing more psychological safety strategies with their teams?
So it's a really good question. And I think like step one is talking about it. Step one is making psychological safety, ironically, a safe thing to talk about and making it, and thereby making it everyone's responsibility. Leaders in organizations have a greater role to play in psychological safety because they have a greater consequence over the people who work for them, right? But as peers and colleagues and people next to each other on production lines or in manufacturing environments, we absolutely have a place to play with each other. And by understanding the dynamics, particularly in respect to safety, if Bob is standing next to you and not wearing his safety gloves, feeling safe to say, "Bob, you should put your gloves on," is a big deal because in many environments, people don't feel safe to do that. They
Right.
feel they'll be humiliated. They'll be seen as the do-gooder or something. But in fact, we need to feel safe to have those conversations, and we need to feel safe to put our gloves on. We need to feel safe to do things safely. We also need to feel safe to point out where there might be defects in a production line or in a machine, or not even where there are defects, just where there are improvements to make. People at the sharp end of work have so many great ideas, potentially great ideas, but how to improve things. So, yeah. Make sure it's everyone's responsibility. Make sure we can talk about it. Make sure we are talking about it. Recognize that it improves not only safety, but quality and performance and staff retention and inclusivity and diversity as well. And start modeling these behaviors and incentivizing these behaviors by making it safe, by rewarding it. Yeah.
And if a company has not doesn't have that level of trust, doesn't have that level of psychological safety, what's one little baby step that they could use to get started with this whole thing? Because, like you said, trust takes a long time to build. It can be destroyed with an eye roll, but there's got to be something that when somebody makes a commitment to doing this, to bringing this level of trust and safety into their plant, what's a good, like I said, just a baby step to get started?
Yeah, so I think maybe there's a point there about reframing work in a sense. And I like to reframe work as experiments. And that sometimes sounds a bit wild to people. But what we're really talking about there is not, it's not saying that we're just going to experiment with everything and just try wild things and fail all over the place. What we're saying is everything we do is a learning opportunity. Everything we do has the potential to teach us something about work and improve how we do it next time. And that's the point. Particularly in something like manufacturing, where we're going through repeated cycles, we're doing the same or very similar things over and over again to get better and better results. That's the point. The point of work is not to do it great this time, it's to get even better every single time we do it. So the point of work is not delivering the thing or making the widget. It's learning how to do it better next time. And this is what domains like healthcare and aviation have learned from. And that's why they, in those domains, their outcomes are really good, certainly much, dramatically improved. And yeah, framing everything as a learning experience, a learning outcome, an experiment, if you like, is really powerful.
Okay. And as we're starting to get to the end of our time together, if there was, is there something that we forgot to talk about or that you wish that I asked you that you want to leave us with?
Oh yeah, there's an interesting and potentially contentious question that I sometimes get asked, which is, can the team be too safe, or can people be too safe? And no, people can't feel too psychologically safe. What we do sometimes find is that when people feel very safe, then we see other things emerge. Let's say there are some problematic beliefs or attitudes in a group of people. Maybe there's some people who hold some racist beliefs, maybe. When they start to feel psychologically safe, they might start feeling safe to say those things. Now, the problem isn't a great deal of psychological safety. The problem is those racist beliefs that people hold. And so but increasing psychological, there is no limit to psychological safety. And the safer people feel, the better the outcomes will be. But what they may surface are the things that are going on that were previously hidden. So I would say to people, don't ever worry about. But never worry about creating a team that is too psychologically safe. That's we're never going to reach that point anyway, even if that point existed. So yeah, that's the contentious one.
Yeah. Interesting. If people did want to continue the conversation and learn more about what you do, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, thanks. So if people want to head over to psychsafety.com or psychsafety.co.uk, we'll get you to the same place. You can find me there. You'll find loads of resources on psychological safety, downloadable tools, loads and loads of articles. You can subscribe to our newsletter. There's a community to get involved in. There are meetups to join. There's training to attend and stickers to buy and all sorts of other stuff. So you really, really get stuck in. There's loads to find there. And yeah, and you can reach out to me online via email, tom@psychsafety.com, and I'm always up for chatting and meeting people and doing stuff and doing fun things together.
Tom, it has been a pleasure having you on the show today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Lisa Ryan, and this is the Manufacturers Network podcast. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Manufacturers Network podcast. Do me a favor and share this podcast with your friends and colleagues so we can grow this network and connect more fantastic folks just like you. You can either send your buddies to the website at manufacturers-network.com or share the Manufacturers Network podcast on your LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you and your industry friends hang out. The bigger and faster we grow the network, the stronger and deeper the community we'll all have. Thanks again, and I appreciate you.